Welcome one, welcome all to the College Try podcast right here on ESPNPensacola.com. I'm your host, Austin Price. And if you want to find this episode of the College Try podcast, you already found it once, it seems. But if you want to find it again and you forget, or if you want to find any other previous episodes of this or other shows we have on this station, you can go to the local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. Or to listen to ESPN Pensacola itself, along with its all its live programming, you can listen on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. Very happy to be with you. 19th episode of the College Try. Very proud that we've made it this far. Very happy for this opportunity. I'm not just sucking up to my bosses. I mean it. Let's get into the action, shall we? Alrighty. Might be a shorter episode this week. I'm not sure. I've got several things to talk about, but I just know we've got some playoff action. That's the main thing we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about some other things as well. Starting with an apology. I was so wrapped up in Selection Day, Selection Sunday. And I was talking about how Alabama didn't get an opportunity. They didn't deserve one, yada, yada, yada. Talking about some of the bowl games that were announced for some of our Floridian teams, so on and so forth. I completely neglected some of the bigger topics that were swirling around college football at that time. Sure, the bowl season is important. Sure, the playoff is important. But there were other stories that I completely neglected, and I deeply apologize for that. So we'll just talk about them retrospectively. For starters, the Army-Navy game. Okay, look, while I didn't give a prediction on this game last week, I don't think it ultimately matters, because the one that I ended up having later in the week was Army 23-20. Army had been the better team coming into the matchup. They were looking unstoppable after dominating Tulane in the American title game. Normally, I'd humor this being a hangover game, but with this rivalry, there's no way that would happen. And I typically associate this matchup as being one of the lower scoring ones. You know, like, you really don't see a ton of scoring. When's the last time you saw these guys combine for, heck, over 50 points? Maybe it's happened recently and I'm just having a brain fart. I can't think of it. Typically, these guys are lower scoring because of the way they run their offense. It's a very physical game on both ends there. So especially with that in mind, I thought, okay, 23-20 in favor of Army, that sounds fair. With all of that said, the beatdown Navy served was a surprise on all fronts for me. Because, wow, 31-13 is insane. And congrats to Navy, man. One heck of a season for both teams there. And I say that wholeheartedly because this is the only college football rivalry where the country feels like it wins either way. I know Pensacola and just this Northwest Florida area as a whole, we kind of associate it with a Navy town. I know that I personally, as a college football fan, kind of like Army. But, hey, man. How can you have a quarrel unless you are a fan of one of the military academies? You went there and you got some just kind of sportsmanship beef with other ones. How can you hate any of these teams? Come on, it's America here. So congrats to both sides. Phenomenal seasons nonetheless. The other thing was the awards. The main talk, of course, the Heisman. We all knew it was going to come down to Travis Hunter and Ashton Jeanty. I personally wanted Jeanty. And I thought he would actually get the nod. It's not just, oh, here's what I think should happen. No, I thought it should happen, and I thought it would. But while I say that, I can't say I'm surprised or upset at the honor going to Hunter. The main argument for Jeanty was that he had a bigger impact on his team success. And the Broncos have certainly been more successful than the Buffaloes. I mean, winning their conference, making the CFP, getting a bye. I get that. However, it's not like Colorado was a total flop. They had their best season in years. They're looking to win a high-profile bowl game against BYU to finish with 10 wins. When you combine that with the never-ending fascination surrounding Hunter's two-way capabilities and the fact that they faced all-around bigger competition week in and week out, he has a pretty good case himself. And I know people are going to say, oh, well, that's team accomplishments, blah, blah, blah. You only bring up team accomplishments when it's this close of a race. They talked about Hunter winning by a margin that was strangely narrow. And I think that's to be expected with these two caliber athletes, high caliber athletes. I bring in the whole team stuff to kind of weigh our options even more, just to bring in all the more into the equation, seeing if we can find a tiebreaker of sorts. But while that controversy will eventually blow over, I mean, yeah, people are saying that Hunter robbed Jeanty. Jeanty was robbed. No, he wasn't. So while that will eventually blow over relatively smoothly, I can assume, Ones that shouldn't are those involving the Biletnikoff and Mackey Awards. Now, if you don't know what those awards are for, they are bestowed upon the nation's best wide receiver and tight end, respectively. So the Biletnikoff goes to the best wide receiver, and the Mackey goes to the best tight end. You with me so far? Alrighty. Long story short, the Biletnikoff went to Travis Hunter. This upset a lot of people, and rightfully so, because there's a fella named Nick Nash, I believe. He's at San Jose State, and he led like every statistical category for wide receivers. And the same could be said for this Bowling Green tight end amongst everyone else at his position. I can't remember his name, but he lost to Mackey to some Penn State kid. How can you lead every major category at your position and not win the award for best player at your position? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, these are decisions that people were calling popularity contests. They kind of brought the integrity of the awards into question, because it's like, okay, Travis Hunter's a huge name, far more than Nick Nash. And Penn State's flashier brand, more iconic brand, more household football name, and they're in the playoffs and yada, yada, yada. So they're going to get looked at before Bowling Green. So as I said, it's a matter of you're taking away from guys who actually indisputably earned the honors. I got to agree with that. How can you not? I mean, the only arguments that could possibly be used against these snubs are them playing for smaller schools and their team's seasons not being as successful. But as I mentioned just a moment ago, I feel that those team-based matters should only be brought into the equation if the race is tight and you need some tiebreakers. These two cases are clearly different. These guys had literally every advantage that one individual player could have over another and still somehow lost. Unless I'm missing something, that tells me that these awards were simply given to some bigger names on bigger teams. And if that doesn't qualify as a popularity contest, I don't know what does. So I think the court of public opinion kind of got the right verdict here. It's a popularity contest. You would rather the awards go to a name like Travis Hunter and guys from schools like Colorado and Penn State. You'd rather have that than have them go to these schmucks in the Mountain West and the MAC. Even if those schmucks are far more deserving and far more proven at their position. Travis Hunter was a great wide receiver, and he's a great athlete. But he was not the best wide receiver, and he did not deserve the Biletnikoff. Same thing goes with that tight end situation. It's just the truth. Also wanted to touch on this, because we were talking about bowls last week, and I talked about neglecting some of the bigger headlines going on. Well, one of those bigger headlines is the transfer portal. In the midst of all this award talk and all this playoff first round upcoming talk, the transfer portal is kind of lingering around there. And we've had some controversial headlines that have been, you know, spewing out from that entity that we call the transfer portal. For example, as I said, bowl season. Marshall has to bow out of their bowl game against Army, I think it is. La Tech, I heard, was supposed to take their place. Marshall having their postseason chances ruined because of transfers not playing. They're announcing their drive to the transfer portal before the bowl game. And Marshall had, like, what was it, over 20? It was like over two dozen players, I think, officially not be available. Technically opt out. Transfer portal and opting out are two different things, or at least they can be. But these guys opted out, and their reason, transfer portal. And honestly, this situation kind of reminds me of the FSU stuff last year. Sure, that was a different situation. That was players genuinely opting out. They were saying, we do not want to play this game. We are going to the NFL. This game doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. Like, that was more flagrant, but it's a similar concept. Players are not available because of where we are in college football today, and it makes these non-playoff bowl games seem all the less meaningful. People already say that these smaller non-playoff bowls, they don't mean anything. Well, these situations with Florida State last year and Marshall now are kind of confirming that, at least where we are in college football today. We had another controversy with the transfer portal regarding Penn State's backup QB, I think it was. He's not going to be present for their playoff path because he has entered the transfer portal. And you would think a lot of people would be blaming this kid, but they're actually not, because it's not really the kid's fault. it is a poorly placed transfer portal window. And both of these stories, I think, is going to put us in a position where we've got to address that. We've got to address that, and we've got to change that. You can't have all these players opt out of a bowl game because of the transfer portal. They have to. They have a window to do it, and they do it then. And now this team doesn't have enough players to field an adequate team. So their school, their team, their fans, their coaches, their opponents potentially miss out on an opportunity to play in a bowl game and to see a bowl game. One more game. Like, you don't know how much that means to a fan. Especially when I root for someone like Wake Forest. I've mentioned it a few times. And I got to tell you, I am happy to just see us go bowling. It's one more game, typically against an unfamiliar opponent, and that's interesting. That's fun. I like to watch it. So this just really sucks that Marshall can be in a position, any team can be in a position where they don't feel that they can field an adequate team. They don't have the numbers. They don't have the talent to put a team out there. So they just opt out of it collectively as a university. And then you've got this backup QB who you never know your team may need. And they're a playoff team. And he's got to back out because, hey, I've got a deadline here. I want to transfer. I got to do it now. So I can't join you on your playoff path. That's just really upsetting. And as I said, it's a bigger issue. Sure, the transfer portal, it's ridiculous how many players enter it. Yeah, we can bicker about that all we want. But that doesn't mean no transferring should ever be allowed. And when you look at how these guys are having to make these decisions when they're having to make them, it's very unfortunate. This goes beyond just players transferring. This is them kind of being strong-armed into transferring at a certain time, by a certain time, and it's hurting teams and it's hurting the sport. So that's really upsetting. I hope we don't hear many more stories like this. I hope it doesn't get much worse than this before it's fixed. But yeah, I wanted to touch on that as well because that is another just glaring issue. It's been a very dramatic week. Let me just put it that way. Whether it be because of the awards or this, it's just crazy. But believe it or not, I've actually got one more transfer story that I kind of want to touch on here because this one isn't a bad story. This one isn't dramatic. I'm going to make it sound dramatic, but not in a conflict way, just more in a cinematic way. Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers are beginning to use the transfer portal. They talked about this one guy maybe coming for a visit, heard rumors about that. Heard a guy perhaps signing with them. It was a whole thing. And it was like, oh, this is the first at Dabo, blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to tell you now. If Clemson, like, doesn't just come around to humoring a transfer here or two, if they truly embrace the transfer portal like some of these other teams have, the ACC is done for. The ACC is done for. Clemson just won the ACC again. Zero transfers, I believe. Now they're starting to kind of talk to some kids, bring a kid by or two. Oh, now they're building their team. Now they're going down this rabbit hole of beefing up their team like everybody else does. Dabo using his resume, his name, his image, Clemson's image to try to get some high-end talent there. You think that's not going to happen? And if it does happen, when it happens, you think that's not going to be detrimental to the competition or lack thereof in the ACC? This is one reason why I think Bill Belichick going to UNC isn't going to work. This is just another dagger in my concerns regarding that. Bill is old. He doesn't have a college football resume. And you're asking him to turn things around for a team in a tricky conference. And now it's already tricky. And now Clemson's going to be embracing the transfer portal, it seems. Oh my goodness. UNC, don't get your hopes up on Bill. And if you're an ACC fan like myself, I'm talking to you, Florida State fans, you might need to kind of brace for impact here. Clemson is going to open up a can of whooping on the ACC. Even when they're having their worst seasons in years, even when they are chewing up the transfer portal and spitting it out, they are still a coin flip these past 4 years to win the conference. Since the 2020 season, following the 2020 season, Wake Forest made the ACC title game over them. Clemson goes to the ACC title game and dominates. Then Florida State and Louisville made it over them. And now this year, Clemson goes to the ACC title game and beats a playoff SMU team. And was beating them bad in the first half. That is without the transfers. God only knows what's going to happen. God only knows what's going to happen if he starts beefing up his teams like Florida State did last year or like Lane Kiffin has at Ole Miss. Oh, my goodness. All right. Want to take a quick break to remind you before we move on that you're listening to the College Try Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Price. You can find this on ESPNPensacola.com. Just look at the local podcast page. You can also listen to ESPN Pensacola on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. All right, I do want to say this. You know, I'm talking about all this doom and gloom, talking about how Clemson's going to have a grip on the ACC and they're not going to let go this time, and talking about how Bill Belichick's going to flail out at UNC, and talking about how the awards were controversial and rightfully so, and talking about how the transfer portal and how it's being managed is hurting the sport in multiple facets. But there's really nothing I can do about any of that. What I can do is look ahead to some of these games that are coming up. And we'll start off by looking at a game that already happened, the Salute to Veterans Bowl between South Alabama and Western Michigan. This was actually a phenomenal game. It was a competitive one, worthy of helping kick off the bowl season. Despite starting off in a hole, the Jaguars brought the game back before some back-and-forth scoring culminated in a 30-23 Jags victory. So good game. I believe I said last week that this win would give USA its third winning season in a row. I think I remember that correctly. But either way, it's nonetheless a winning season for them. They went 7-6. One last tip of the cap to our boys over in Mobile. I'm proud of you. Now, as for the notable games coming up before next week, we've got another relatively local team, as I call them, but it's just a team in the state of Florida. The Florida Gators taking on the Tulane Green Wave in the Gasparilla Bowl on Friday, December 20th. That's this Friday. And I got to tell you, this is probably one of the best matchups outside of the playoff. I genuinely mean that. I can't believe I'm saying that about this Gators team and about Tulane. Florida was expected to bomb. It looked like 4-8 would be a good year for them coming into this season. Tulane, they lost their coach. They lost some talent. It's like, oh, they're probably not going to be as good. They're looking, I think, what, to finish with 10 wins this year? Florida looking to finish with 8? Who would have thought that? That is just phenomenal. I'm so proud of both of these teams. As far as who I have winning it, because as I said, these games are coming up within the next week, so I'm going to give my predictions on them. I've got Florida winning by a couple scores. The score I got here is 30-14. Man, Billy Napier says that UF should be near full strength, meaning they have few opt-outs for this game. So if we once again see this Lagway-led team that's been kicking butt, I truly believe the Gators will be just fine against what has, as of late, been a decent Group of Five team in Tulane. I say decent because how can you tell me that's not a good word to describe them? Sure, they have quality losses, but they're nonetheless ugly losses to Memphis and Army. They're good, but they have a ceiling, and that's against Group of Five competition. What do you think a winning SEC team is going to do to them? So Tulane, you're good. I just don't think you're going to be in your element here. All right. That's really the only non-playoff game I wanted to touch on, and for good reason. I mean, it's just a great matchup. But I think this is another great one for Friday. I can't wait for this week to be over. Not because I like hate my job or anything, but because I want to get to this first round action. Friday, December 20th, Notre Dame and Indiana. The first game of the first round of the College Football Playoff 12-team bracket. I've got Notre Dame winning 38-28. This is a difficult game for me to call, I won't lie. Both sides have had such little opportunities to prove their worth. And that's at the highest level. Indiana's only had one, and it was an objectively brutal opportunity. They had to take on OSU in the shoe. Notre Dame hasn't really had any. I mean, we could see some epic showdown here. We could see an ugly game that no one should win, or maybe even some completely one-sided blowout. I don't know. So I got to go with my gut here. And my gut says to take the Irish, solely because of how bad the Hoosiers lost in Columbus. If that game were closer, I'd perhaps humor an IU win here, but the Buckeyes exposed a clear ceiling, and it's one that I think could very well be eclipsed by a trip to South Bend. Indiana is good. Notre Dame is good. No one, and I mean literally no one, are looking at these guys as contenders. They're just teams that deserved an opportunity. But they're both so unproven. So I think there is potential for Indiana. I don't think it's going to be some blowout. As I said, 38-28. But going on the road to South Bend, Notre Dame, obviously has better talent on paper 9.5 times out of 10. I've got Notre Dame getting the win, but it's no knock on Indiana. I think circumstances are probably just a bit better for Notre Dame, and it's going to be enough to put them over the top. Getting into our Saturday games, Penn State, SMU, number 6 hosting number 11. I got Penn State winning this one 36-20. I wouldn't read too much into the score here on this one. Just know that while I think the Nittany Lions will prove that they are significantly better than the Mustangs, it won't be some total beatdown. Both are consistent teams. Sure, they've struggled in their bigger games, but no one has proven that they can run away from them. That's the thing. They're very similar teams. No one's proven that they can run away from SMU or Penn State. Clemson tried to prove it. And look at how SMU made that game close. Oregon tried to prove it. Penn State kept fighting back, kept keeping that score one possession. No one can run away from these teams. And that's why I like them both. And I think that they can both be scrappy. I think they're both teams to watch. I think they're both great stories. But there's one problem, and that's the fact that Penn State can say that after facing OSU and Oregon, that they've been a contender everywhere. Even when facing the Ducks, the unbeaten top-ranked Ducks on a neutral site, and even when taking on Ohio State, who's one of the biggest household names, most dominant names in the Big Ten ever, both playoff teams, both teams that you got to consider in the hunt, even after facing them, Penn State can say, we competed with everyone. SMU can say that, but not against that caliber of competition. They're saying it against BYU and Clemson, and I'm sorry, I don't think I have to explain to you that there's a gap there. So I'm taking the Nittany Lions by a convincing margin. But with that said, let the record show, SMU still belonged in this scenario before Alabama did. Argue with a wall. Next up, number 5, Texas, hosting number 12, Clemson. I actually went in a lower scoring direction here. I got Texas 27-13. I went this way because of how unproven Texas is, especially offensively, when facing tougher competition. Whether that be the two times they played Georgia or even someone like Texas A&M. All of those times, those were like their tougher games. 3 times, twice against Georgia, once against A&M. None saw them hit 20 points. None. They lost 30-15 at home to Georgia the first time. They beat Texas A&M 17-7. And they recently lost in the SEC title game. 22-19. It's just they're a low-scoring team. Their offense hasn't looked unstoppable in really any major game, but especially not against the better competition they've played. And that has me believing that a team with Clemson's talent and coaching will perhaps not be as merciless. But not exactly, you know, they won't be as merciless as Georgia, but they won't be feeding the Longhorns any highlight reel plays. You know what I mean? They're a tough team, well-built team. Speaking of them, the Tigers are good. That's it. They stumbled into the playoffs last minute. That's going to shine in this game. They haven't faced a team with the physicality of Texas in forever, which is something I'm sure that will also be evident. So I know words like merciless and physicality fall a bit more on the broad side of the analytical world, but those are the only words you can typically say about games like these. One team's good, but the other's just clearly better. Congrats on reestablishing your grip on the ACC, Clemson. Congrats on maybe opening the door to the transfer portal and forever dominating the Atlantic Coast, but that'll never get you far in games like these, if you want the truth. Not with how we sit today in the college football hierarchy. That's not going to happen. Not as long as you're still losing multiple games, you're still in a position where you can get beat by Louisville by double digits, you're in a position where you can't even compete with Georgia remotely. Nah, I just don't see it happening. And then last but not least, number 8 Ohio State hosting number 9 Tennessee. I think a lot of people gave up on OSU after their loss to Michigan. But before, I mean, they were considered as one of the top contenders this season. I know their loss to Michigan was ugly, but any other time some allegedly great team squeaks by their weak rival, what do we always hear? We get the whole, oh, well, rivalries are always tough. We always get that speech. Not this time, though. This time it means that you're forever terrible and you're guaranteed to lose at home to an also flawed Tennessee team. I don't know if I buy that. I mean, it'll be a good game. It's meant to, being between the 8 and 9 seeds after all. But I just haven't seen enough bad from OSU to turn my back on them, nor have I seen enough good from Tennessee to take them when they're going on the road for a matchup of this magnitude. So I've got Ohio State 32-26. I think this will be, I think by point spread alone, I think I have this being the best game. I think I've got it being the only one decided by single digits. 32-26, as I said. But that means I officially have the home team taking complete control of the first round. I have the home team winning every time. And in games like Indiana, Notre Dame, in games like Ohio State, Tennessee especially, I think that's, I think the home field advantage is especially important. I love the inclusion of that, not just because it lets the playoff action come to these universities and we get to see these sceneries get hyped for postseason play, but also because it is a deciding factor. They talk about that scientifically. How, the, you know, oh, well, it actually dictates this amount of points in the spread, blah, blah, blah. I don't really care. You see it. You see the change. You know the change. You feel the change. Whenever you go out somewhere to one of these enemy territories with these kinds of implications, it's phenomenal. So I'm really glad that they implemented that, and I think we're really going to see it here throughout this first round of games. So I think that's awesome, and I hope I know they're going to talk about tweaking the playoff bracket a bit in the coming year or two, but I hope that is one thing that doesn't change, and I don't think it will. I'm not hearing any complaints on that. You've been listening to the College Try podcast every week. I think we're right now, what? We're still at Tuesdays, right? I think that's where we'll stay. We've been shifting the days around a bit. But you can find this episode and all previous ones on the local podcast page on ESPNPensacola.com. You can listen to ESPN Pensacola live on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. And honestly, I was just talking about coming back on Tuesdays, but I will be back on Monday, December 23rd, for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Got to get the show out a bit early. I'm sure you understand. But until then, have a good week.